This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to You Don't Know Me. I'm Virginia Trioli. On this podcast, you discover the person behind the person. At what point was there a fork in the road? What is their secret pleasure? I've got seven questions, but where could the conversation lead with David Campbell? He's a singer, an actor, a stage performer, and a radio presenter. And he also just so happens to be the son of Jimmy Barnes. But there's so much more to his story than having a famous father and discovering that that man is your father very late in life. David Campbell, great to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Apart from hosting a, you know, celebrated TV show, of course, and being on radio and all the other things, you're now a child's book author. What is this with every well-known star having to have their own kids' book? David, explain this to me.
I think it's because they have kids and then they need to find new stories to tell their kids. Or they're, in my case, I'm really influenced, especially by the twins, that it's been such a wild adventure and they're such big personalities.
Yes.
And the latest one I've just released, which is My Tooth is Loof, is pretty much, it's the one I feel worst about because it is almost verbatim what they are like. There's no real embellishment sometimes that you can put in a book. This one is just straight up their personality.
Tell us about the twins.
So the twins are, so Billy and Betty, they're just big personalities. And you know, Betty is bold, brash, she's loud, she's strong, she's absolutely front-footed. She's very much like my wife and, you know, other members of my family that are that big personality. Billy's much more artistic and moodier and sensitive and quiet at times. You know, he can still be sort of have the boy energy. But so they've got... But they're very close, and it's a wild thing to watch them grow up and to see how close they are with each other and how they play and how they talk. I mean, I hope it continues. I've spoken to a lot of twin parents, and it can vary from, you know, family to family, but
yes.
I'm hoping that they stay this close.
I know a few twins, and they will, you know, come together and pull apart and come together and pull apart, but but if anyone else tries to get in between them, that is it. They are just locked together, and that devotion to each other is visceral.
Yeah, it's really incredible. But the good thing is as well, because they've got an older brother, and it's his birthday today,
and
yeah, he's 12. Happy birthday, Leo. But they're actually both very similar to him. So it's a real triangle, the three of them. They're very, very tight as a group. And I always thought that the age difference would be quite big for them, but it's not. I mean, Betty and Leo both love musicals and singing show tunes, and Leo and Bill like, you know, playing Star Wars together. So they've all got their own connections. It's great. So we're very lucky.
Very lucky indeed. Lovely description. David, how's life on TV and radio going for you?
It's better now the election's over, don't you think?
Yes, yes.
I actually got COVID a couple of weeks ago during the last week of the election, and while I got it really, really badly, and I know lots of people are suffering from COVID and people are having long COVID, I could not have been happier to have that final week off work. I was like, you know, I'm done. I took a week sabbatical of not watching any TV or news and just went, whatever's going to happen is going to happen.
Are you just sort of surrounded by people who just don't want to talk about or acknowledge COVID, that want to pretend it's not there?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of people that I know, and like my wife and all of our friends, are in the entertainment industry. So unfortunately, as opposed to like our work or a lot of people who work in offices, there is not a lot of, fat to give away there in the entertainment industry now. So, if there's somebody goes down on a cast, more than one person goes down on the cast, that show goes dark for at least a week.
Yeah.
So, and then that puts a lot of people out of work, that puts a lot of producers under a lot of strain. The trickle-down effect is really huge. So I know that in entertainment, we, or people that I know, have not stopped talking about COVID. I know that people elsewhere don't want to, or politicians, or people in the media, or whatever, but certainly in entertainment is one of those industries that's still very much at the front of this, and very much feeling, aside from essential workers, obviously, but are very much feeling like, no, we are still not ready to, we're not recovering from this yet. And so, and particularly with audiences, there's still hesitancy, I think, with audiences and going out and retraining them to see shows and seeing Australian shows, because there's not a lot of international act touring. So it's it's very mixed up there, but certainly nothing compared to essential workers, that's for sure.
No, but that's a really good point, though, about the, you know, those who have to live with it daily. It absolutely defines your life. David Campbell is with you, co-host of Today Extra, one of Australia's leading performers and now the author of the children's book, My Tooth is Luth, and that is L-O-O-T-H, because that's how you talk when your tooth is Luth. Let's get to the questions. The first one is, you'd never know it, but I...
Okay, I had two for this. One of them is I dye my hair more now than I've done before because I have mousy brown hair. And so I'm very much, I'm nearly 50. I have no problem with my age and I have no problem fighting against my age. But I actually started dyeing my hair because it just, I'm getting greys, but not enough to go, let's go for it.
Let's be the silver fox, like, yes.
Yeah, I want to be the silver fox, but it's just not going fast. It's like really slow going. So I've started dyeing it a bit more now because I'm just like, this is, it's ill-defined my hair now.
David, I want to say, and I think this is really interesting, there is a taboo around men dyeing their hair that I think is so unkind and so unfair. I dye my hair, every woman I know gets foils or whatever, you know, the like, you know, balayage, full head dye. But mention a bloke dyeing his hair and the laughing and the giggling and the eye rolling I think is really, really unfair. So well done.
I'm going to be there. And I tell you who else dyes his hair because I just saw the movie, and that is Tom Cruise because he is not 60 and has the same colour hair as me.
Yeah, fair enough.
No way.
Yeah, no, fair enough, fair enough. What was your other one for this?
I cry a lot. I'm a crier. I've always been a crier. When I was a kid, I was a crier. Probably more sensitive, like I mentioned, Billy, very sensitive. I was a crier as a kid, and I've really come back to that now, and I've stopped, I guess, I've stopped trying to apologize for it or stop trying to not make it happen. I've become very open with just, if I feel like I'm going to cry, I'm just going to cry. In front of my kids, it doesn't matter. At a movie,
yes.
If I'm talking about something that affects me, if I'm feeling somebody else's pain on talking about a subject,
yeah.
I think it's good to be open and cry.
I love it. When was the last time you cried?
Yesterday. My daughter, and I kid you not, she just read her reader at home really, really well. And I just said, I'm so proud of how good you are and how smart you are. And I can feel it now. I'm starting to well up like, I can't believe I have a really smart child. Like, all my kids are smart. But like, I just was so proud of her. So I just, yeah.
David, I love it. Look, you started in youth theatre. In fact, I think you were recognised with an Australia Day Award for your contribution to youth theatre back in the day. But was there a fork in the road that you almost took another way?
Not really. I've always wanted to go into arts of some sort. And I was trying to think of what an interesting fork in the road would be. But I'd always been in arts and never really had another option because I wasn't good at school. However, the biggest fork in the road that I can think of in my career happened about 18 years ago, and I was doing a pop record. I just finished touring Shout. I was trying to do this pop record. It wasn't going very well, but I was doing lots and lots of gigs, and I had an audition, and I hate people talking about auditions because it's futile, because if you didn't get the gig, who cares? But this is the biggest, closest thing I ever had to a total, like, oh, my God. And I got to audition for the band Foreigner.
What?
And so this is very, they were doing a worldwide search for a new singer because Lou Gramm had gone and did a solo career. And I think there was fractious in the band. And so they wanted to try again. And so I was one of the people who was like, just put some songs down. So I got to sing, Waiting for a Girl Like You and all the songs, Cold as Ice.
I Want to Know What Love Is. Were you singing that one?
I Want to Know What Love Is. And I sent it off thinking nothing of it. And I got down to the final two between me and a guy who actually is now the lead singer of Foreigner. And I got to speak to like the band, and I got to speak to like, it was like a moment. I thought, holy cow, I think I'm going to tour with Foreigner now. And what's my life going to be like? And they ended up going with somebody who was far more of the Foreigner sound, California rock sound, and more age appropriate for the band too. But that was the closest moment that I can think of that was a true, like, wow, my life is really about to go upside down.
Yeah.
It was very close.
Because if you had have got that, I mean, that would have been a touring rock and roll lifestyle. That would have changed everything for your family.
I wouldn't have met my wife.
You wouldn't have met your wife. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It would be a different world completely. And that's the biggest moment like that was so like, wow, that would have been a very different change.
That's a nice sliding door moment. What about I always? What do you always do?
Look, I always say I love you to my wife and kids like it's the last time I'm going to see them, because I'm just of that age now and I really don't ever want them to think that. So it's a lot. You know, I don't want to overuse it and I don't want it to lose its meaning, but I always, when I say goodbye in the morning or when I say goodnight at night, it's always, I love you. I love you. You are, you know, you mean something to me. And because, I don't know, I guess I'm just paranoid and I'm a fatalist. And I can, you know, part of the reason why I did a lot of therapy is because I can be very much, I can spiral to the end of my life in 3 minutes flat at breakneck speed. You know, I can be very much that way. So I guess there's still part of me that does that because of that, but I always say I love you because I don't want anything to happen.
That's really interesting. I remember that was a famous story that's been told about Kate Blanchett. She lost her father at a young age, and the story, I don't know if it's urban myth or true, because, you know, she never, you know, got to say that or say goodbye to her father, that right. She never leaves the house without saying that either. But that can become almost like a bit of an emotional burden, both for you and potentially for the person hearing it. Can't it?
Yeah, well, I don't tell them why. I try and make it light. I don't go, I love you, oh my God, this
boy,
could be it.
Yeah.
If I don't come back, please no. No, I definitely make it just like, hey, know that I love you, gotta go, bye.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make it fuck, but I always say it so they know that. I don't know, something in my head is always like, you hear people when they talk about those stories, they always say, well, you know, the best ones are always like, the last thing they said to me was, I love you. And I think that, you know, or I always knew that my such and such, my dad, my mother, my sister, whatever, loved me. So it's like, I kind of want that legacy. I think you have to be active in that legacy.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I do wonder if one of the, you know, the best known stories about you and your life, David Campbell, plays a role in that, and that is that you're the son of Jimmy Barnes, but raised by your maternal grandmother, believing until you were 10 that your grandma was your mum, and reunited with Jimmy Barnes and have a wonderful relationship since then. Do you think some of that plays into that desire to keep that connection and to keep your children knowing that you know them, you love them?
Yes, absolutely. You've nailed it. And who do I invoice for this therapy session?
No, free of charge, Dale. Nothing for you.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And I do think that there is a sense of abandonment that I have since those years that you just never really leaves you that I have since being a kid. And even though I was, you know, my grandmother was awesome and raised me and very much loved me and treated me like a son. Once that moment happened in my life where I realized, oh, everyone's been lying, that really meant, because it was right at my preteen years. So that I carried that for a long, long time. And so, I don't want my kids to have the insecurity of childhood that I kind of feel like I carried for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get your relationship with Jimmy so well grounded? Because that's a hard thing to get over.
I don't think it was for a long time. I think that you have to go through, I mean, the good thing was it happened quite early. So, you know, I went through my teens with them. I started to, you know, all my, you know, my brothers and sisters were born and I was around for most of them growing up. And so, you know, there was a real healing that Jane Barnes and, you know, my dad really did actively to sort of keep me there. But, you know, I was also a teenager in another town, you know, being angsty and trying to find my own way. And I think that it was very difficult. And even in my 20s and 30s, trying to find my career and not wanting to be associated with him, it was a very confusing time to sort of make my own mark in the industry, which is part of the reason why America was so good for me, because I could just start again and rely on my own talent there. And so that was probably, once I sort of had that success over there, it sort of allowed me to sort of let go of a lot of baggage and move on.
Yeah, and you really do well in America, appearing in the Tony Award-winning Love, Valor and Compassion, and then winning a New York Backstage Award as Outstanding Vocalist of the Year, so a terrifically rewarding time there. So it worked. What about the question, I never? What's something you never do, David?
I never regret being sober. I never regret or think, oh, I could use a drink. I never regret it. I know I jokingly say I drank all the drinks, but I certainly don't. I it was such a big part of my life, and I saw it be so destructive, not only in parts of my life and relationships that I would have, but in other relationships like my father and his addiction and members of my family who struggle continually with addictions of some form or another. So getting sober for me was almost a relief. It was a moment of clarity. It was a moment of wanting to change, I guess, like I talked about before with my kids saying, I don't want them to have any insecurities about my love for them. It was not wanting my kids to also see what I saw as a child, seeing parents out of control. And I certainly wasn't in control of my drinking. I don't think I was a full-blown alcoholic, but I certainly stared into the dark room a lot. And I think that was very, it was something that I never wanted my kids to see. And the moment, it was because of my son Leo that I sobered up. I had a bad night where I was very sick after being not even very drunk the night before, but for whatever reason, I was very ill. We were going on holidays and he would have been 3 or 4. And I couldn't, you know, one of those moments you're hungover and for no reason, you just can't control your body. He just said very clearly, oh, Dad's not well. And I thought, nah, I saw Dad not well my whole life. I've seen parents not well my whole life, and that is not the memory he's going to have of me. And so that was it. It was as easy as the one thing I did get from my grandmother was good willpower. And so it was easy to just go like, that's it, I'm done. I am done. He is not going to see me like that or see me like that because I want to hang with my mates and have a good time. I can show him that you can have a good time in life and be present and be sober and see how that goes, because there is a history of addiction in my family and I wanted to try and break that cycle.
Tell us about a time that you got something terribly wrong, David.
Oh, yeah.
this has got a where do I begin sort of element about it.
Well, I think there's a lot of wrong moments that you make in your life and your career. And it's hard. I think Sinatra saying regrets, I have a few, and I get it. Because sometimes those regrets lead you to where you are. And so you don't really want to change the course of your history because I'm so happy where I am now.
Sure, but that Sinatra line always gets me. Regrets, I have a few, but then again, too few to mention. I always listen to that line and I think, really? You've got too few to mention? I've got an armful of them. What have you got,
David?
I'm
with you on that one. Yeah, I think he should have been more honest with
his life. Yeah, that's bull.
Yeah, it's total bull. One of the big regrets I had was just before we mentioned the Foreigner thing before, that came at the tail end of me trying to make a pop rock album, coming out of theatre and doing all the stuff on Broadway and off-Broadway, coming back and doing Shout and sort of establishing who I was as an identity in this country and who I was in myself, and then foolishly thinking, you know what I should do? Follow in my dad's footsteps and make a pop rock record. Now's the time. And that was probably one of the worst decisions, not necessarily I made for my career. There was some success there. The album never really came out. I lost a lot of money making it. That had some pop singles that did quite well, and it kept my career going for a period of time. But what it did to my psyche trying to chase that, what it did to my self-confidence, what it did to my ego, and I don't mean that I've got a big ego, but you need to have a healthy ego, and I don't think ego, like Skyhooks, is a dirty word. I actually think it's positive, but it really did damage me to the point where I did not know what to do for a long time. I became paralyzed with fear. I became paralyzed with just crippling self-doubt and depression and drinking very heavily to sort of numb those pains and feelings and escape that torture of like, this is not working and I've made a terrible mistake, not only for my career because it recovered, but definitely for my personal self. It was a fatal error and I should not have made it.
That's really interesting. But talking there about making that, you know, tricky transition from Broadway, which, you know, is your home, you know, that's your happy hunting ground and somewhere you started and where you continue. But then, you know, having a successful career in TV on Channel 9 with Today Extra. Yeah. Why do you reckon we don't do those great, you know, variety TV shows anymore, which would, you know, classically be a happy home for people like you as well, where, you know, we get to hear that music, sing those songs. There's just no place for it on television anymore, it seems.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, one of the reasons why I love doing my job is that I got to follow in people like Bert and Don's footsteps. You know, those are the guys that we grew up on that trained us, and you know, Daryl and Rove, you know, those are the great traditions of this of this genre moving forward. And we did it so well in this country. Mm. And we gave it such an Aussie flavor and a character that American and English can't really do. There was a great sort of larrikinism to it that, but I don't mean that in the sort of negative way that it could be almost like a trope now, where it was a real sort of like, let's just take it easy and have a great time.
But yeah, there was an ease and charm about it, yeah.
There was, but now I think it's financial. I think the whole thing is just financial. There's just not enough money to in ads to make a show that needs to be as good as that, as big as that. But there might be ways as media changes again, and if reality TV dies off, and you know, they often are going back to the well of things that worked in the past. So maybe if I just stick it out long enough,
yeah,
the opportunity may arise again.
They can drag you out like an old Bert Newton right at the very end. There.
Listen, that's a great compliment.
No, exactly. That's something to aim for.
Exactly.
David Campbell, how about this question? It's a small thing, but I'm still so proud that I'm
plant-based. I went vegan for Bobby Darin. I did the Bobby Darin
years
ago. And I thought, how am I going to look like this? Really got a guy who was thin, suits hung off him, he had a heart condition, obviously there was a lot of things going on, but yeah. You know, those guys, the suits hung off and they looked really cool. So how can I do that and do 8 shows a week and the TV show and be healthy? So I sort of went down the plant-based routine just to sort of for that show only, just to sort of, I thought that was the great way to maintain that and still be and not lose health or anything like that or energy. And then once I did that, I realized I was doing it for animals and the planet, and it was my own sort of contribution to the climate, and I never looked back. It was one of those things, and unlike booze, you know, where I think I never regret being sober. I mean, I certainly now, it's getting better now, but it took a while to get decent ice cream that I liked because I'm a bogan, or chocolates that I like because I'm a bogan, you know, and you know, now we have impossible meats. That didn't happen when I first went plant-based, but yeah. Now I love it because of all those things too, because now I can have the things that I, even though morally it was the right thing to do, I did miss those things, but I couldn't bring myself to do it again. So, yeah, I'm happiest that I made that choice.
Nice move. I wish I could walk past a steak, but I just can't do it.
No, it's not for everyone. I'm doing it for you.
Okay. Our final question this morning is, my secret pleasure is, or your guilty pleasure, whichever way you want to go here.
Napping.
Every day?
Napping is the key. Every day. If I can, a lot. A lot. If I, like, you know, a couple times a week at least. It is, I mean, we lived through twins, and so we lost a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
Lisa and I, but we have just, we've come around to napping in such a big way. I love it. And if my wife, look, unfortunately, my wife is like she calls herself like one of those little like dolls, like those Russian dolls. You can put their heads back and her eyes shut and she's gone. So she's great at getting to sleep, whereas I'm not. I overthink at night. So for me, you know, through a week, if I can nap once or twice a week, particularly if you're singing as well on top of that, it's great for the voice, which I didn't know as a young person. Napping is my favorite thing.
Nothing more delicious than a perfect nap. But do you have a time limit on it, a time that works for you and then a time past which it does not work for you?
Yeah, 15 to 20 max.
Yeah.
I can actually do, if I'm on the couch with my kids, and if my kids are near me for some reason, if they're physically like leaning, you know, kids lean against you on the couch, that'll put me under for 5 minutes because I know they're safe.
Yes.
So I have this sort of like, oh, they're here, they're safe, and I just dip. So I can do anywhere from 5 to 15 to 20 maximum. Anything other than that, it's really bad.
David, great to chat to you today. It was delightful. Thank you so much.
Oh, Virginia, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You Don't Know Me is presented by me, Virginia Trioli, produced by Kelsey Rotino, Jules Hay and Shelley Hadfield, with thanks to Katrina Palmer. Audio production by Ross Kay. On the next episode of You Don't Know Me, you'll hear from Academy Award-nominated actor, presenter, TV star and all-round gentleman, Richard E. Grant.
I think that the common denominator for actors, without exception, that I've worked with over the last 40 years is this formula of large ego, low self-esteem.
Absolutely.
And that goes all the way through. And it's a contradiction because people, you have to have the confidence to go, please give me this job over Virginia. But once you've got it, you think, I'm not worthy of that. So it's an odd combination.
That's next time on You Don't Know Me. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Sammy J here, and I'm just going to come out there and say it. I know you're a bunch of night owls, so you might not be up with early birds like me on ABC Melbourne Breakfast, but I wanted to tell you about the Sammy J Snack Pack. Look, I don't want to crow about it, but it's a little podcast that you can soar into, and it's available right now, whatever you're doing. You could listen to it when you're flying through the air, or maybe when you're at home doing some nesting, or it's also great when you're doing human things. Like, that's an option as well. The Sammy J Snack Pack. Find it now on the ABC Listen app.